There will come a time when our country will have to decide whether same-sex marriages should be legalized. And churches will have to decide whether such marriages are sacramental and should be witnessed and blessed within our buildings. There is much discussion on the subject in the UK and the USA, including in the gay and lesbian communities. Among the latter, there are some who have significant misgivings whether this is desirable. Marriage has been closely allied with discrimination that favours heterosexuals over lesbians, gay men, and bisexuals. On the other hand, there are couples coming to St. Matthew's and other progressive churches every year, clearly asking for marriage and not a blessing related to their civil union. Why is marriage exclusively the preserve of heterosexuals? Can any sacrament, for that is how the Anglican Church understands marriage, be the exclusive preserve of one section of society? Given the scientific evidence pertaining to sexual orientation, should the Church continue to discriminate, and in doing so further weaken its credibility in the populace at large? Marriage was not understood as a sacrament by the Christian Church until the 12th century. The classic definition of sacrament is a visible sign of an invisible grace. In the 1662 Book of Common Prayer, this sacramental understanding is referred to when marriage is spoken of as signifying unto us the mystical union that is betwixt Christ and his church. Don't you love the betwixt? Comparing marriage to the relationship between Christ and the church is problematic if taken literally. Does it refer to the relationship between Jesus and the 12, who were all men? Does it refer to the relationship after Pentecost, which is sometimes called the birth of the church, when the physical Jesus is dead? Does it refer, as implied in the context of Ephesians 5, to the sacrificial interpretation of Jesus' death, namely dying for the church? And is dying relevant at all to the happily ever after hope of marriage? Taken metaphorically and in its best sense, I think that mystical union is talking about a commitment of love, of giving of oneself, and of being bound in a common cause. So when the church says marriage is a sacrament, it means that in the mutual commitment of the couple, something of God can be glimpsed. The role of the state and the church in regard to marriage are different. The state recognizes the formalization of a relationship as a legal entity, as long as both parties meet certain criteria, of which being different genders is one. The church, on the other hand, recognizes and blesses the power and potential of committed love to provide personal fulfillment, a place of nurture for dependents, especially children, and to exemplify self-giving service. These, of course, are high ideals, and although the church doesn't apologize for them, it realizes that many experience marital life differently. Both the church and the state also recognize that marriages can end before the death of either spouse and provide assistance with that. It's argued by some that the roles of the state and the church should be kept separate. In other words, every couple should be married in a registry office. Then those wishing to have a religious ceremony can do so later. This is normative in other countries. One argument in favor of this arrangement is to keep the church independent. Thus, in theory, if the church agreed to same-sex marriages, a couple could have such a service while being legally, in the eyes of the state, unable to marry. Before, however, any change regarding same-sex marriage comes about, we need to consider the history of marriage and what, in this time and place, is intrinsic to it. For even a cursory look at marriage's history tells us that it's changed from age to age. In biblical times, patriarchy was normative. The father ruled over an extended household, including wives and concubines. Marriage was for the purpose of gaining property rights and protecting bloodlines. Polygamy was also normative. While the Jesus movement challenged a number of patriarchy's assumptions, including the presumed inequality before God of men and women, as time passed, the assumption of male dominance returned. Ephesians 5, written in the late first century and not by St. Paul, states, "Wives, be subject to your husband," and "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church." While the husband is exhorted to sacrificially care, there's no denying that he is in charge. Indeed, the text calls him the head. This overarching belief in male authority was prevalent in the church's understanding of marriage right up until the 20th century. The 1662 Book of Common Prayer, Marriage Service, has the woman vowing to obey her husband, but not vice versa. The 1928 version of the prayer book, though, deletes those words, to obey. And the 1989 New Zealand prayer book, Marriages Services, following the 1928 version, have the assumption throughout of a mutual and equal relationship. So what was considered for centuries to be intrinsic to marriage has, over the last 100 years, radically changed. What was considered intrinsic was that unequal power relationship between men and women. Another fundamental change to our understanding of marriage has been the necessity for this union to produce children. Although children have been the result of both licit and illicit unions since time immemorial, marriage seemed to be a way to mark out who would be groomed to inherit and who would not. The idea of children being valued and cherished for their own sake, regardless of their sex or birth order, was foreign. The 1662 Book of Common Prayer states, firstly, that marriage was ordained for the procreation of children. Allied to this is its second stated reason for marriage, namely the desire to direct sexual proclivity. The 1662 BCP says nothing about mutual affection and commitment between the couple. However, the 1989 New Zealand prayer book does not presume that a couple will try to have children, or must have children, or are unfulfilled or failing God if they don't. Rather, it talks about marriage providing the stability necessary for family life, so that children may be cared for lovingly and grow to full maturity. Note, the wording does not preclude relationships other than marriage providing similar stability. At one time, the procreation of children was seen as intrinsic to marriage. While the church still cares deeply about the nurture and upbringing of children, it does not see this as central to the sacrament of marriage. Rather, it is the commitment of the couple and the loving, long-term quality of that relationship that is at the heart of the sacrament. Today, stable, loving relationships, married or not, involving sexual intimacy or not, often provide support for dependents, whether those dependents are aging parents, sick friends, or their own or others' children. The constellation called family is wide and varied. What seems important is an affirmation of the love that is at the center of stable families, a love entailing self-giving commitment and affection. In that sort of stability, children as well as others find a place of nurture and well-being. Isaiah 43 this morning reminds us that God does new things. Our ethics and doctrines are not just repetitions of the past. In each time and culture, the Spirit of God moves, advocating for justice, inviting us to think more deeply. It is time that we, the church, reconsidered what we understand by sacrament and by the sacrament of marriage. What were considered marriage's unshakable foundations in the past, like male dominance and procreation, are no longer. Likewise, we need to consider how foundational is having two opposite sex partners. Should the sacrament of marriage, pointing as it does to a depth of mutual love, equality, self-giving commitment and fidelity, be solely the preserve of the heterosexual community? To those gay couples who wish to be married, who have been denied the sacrament when the quality and commitment of their relationships have been sacramental, I pray the day is coming when discriminatory barriers in law and doctrine will be removed, when the doors so long shut will be opened, when the power of love will overcome the power of fear. May that day come, and may we be a part of its coming.